Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week. Good morning, everybody. If you're new here, my name's Britt. I serve here as the lead pastor, and we're just so glad that you came to join us. I've noticed that a lot of folks have moved up to the front today because they wanted to be that much closer to my sermon. So thanks for coming up here, all you guys. You can be seated. Before I jump into the message today, for those of you that missed last week, I started talking about a project our church has that we're going to do this Christmas, hopefully. We want to build a playground for our preschool children over here off to the left of our main entrance when you come in. It's one of the things that was on my bucket list when I took the position here. I thought, you know, if we could do this, this would be super cool for our kids. Give our kids a place to hang out, get their wiggles out after church or during their classes. And, of course, I called it the kid jail, too, so we could put them in there. We don't have to worry about what they're doing, and we could hang out after church and talk. So if you haven't thought about that or anything, I just ask you to pray about giving to that. We think our part of it is going to cost us about $50,000. There's a company that's going to donate the playground equipment to us, so that's super cool. Just pray about it. You know, we don't want to twist your arms or anything, but anything that comes over our monthly budget, we're gonna put to that, and then bless our missionaries, and then of course our December offering tends to carry us through some of our lower months during the year. So pray about that, and that'll get started after the first of the year. Normally, we have a reader come up and read the passage of Scripture that we're going to be looking at today, but I'm going to put the passage of Scripture up, and I just wonder if you might be able to figure out why I didn't ask somebody to read this today. Some of those names are pretty intimidating, so Aminadab and Rehoboam, Jehoshaphat, and Zerubbabel. How many of you, when you read through the Bible, you actually read the genealogical passages? Raise your hand. Okay, there's like 10 of us. And then how many, like, be honest, like, how many of you just skip these sections? Okay, that's okay, you know. Sinners are welcome. But maybe you shouldn't skip them, and I'm going to show you why today, because you've heard the saying, you know, the devil's in the details. In this case, the truth about our loving God is in the details of the genealogy. Here. A few years ago, Cindy and I got kind of like pumped up about trying to figure out what our family heritage is, and so we both signed up for Ancestry.com. How many of you have done this, like through one of those things? Okay, hopefully we're not related or anything. But Cindy was pretty sure about her family tree, and that proved true. Put that up on the screen. She is like 92% from the Netherlands. She's like almost 100% Dutch. And for Dutch people, they often say, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. So she's a purebred. Her family was concerned that she was marrying someone that was more like who I am. I don't really know. These are my people. I'm like all over the place. I'm a Heinz 57, or also known as a mutt. You know, I'm not a purebred in any way. But so, like, why are we interested in who our people are? Because where we came from often tells us something about who we are today, right? And Matthew begins his gospel with this family tree of Jesus. And that feels odd to us, but it made perfect sense to his intended readers. Because who was in your family tree in the first century was one of the most important things about you. And they would pay people to research and record your family because it was your resume. It was your credentials. It defined you. It's what gave you status.
or not. And it's how doors of success were opened and positions became available to you or not. It actually foretold your economic future. So can you imagine? You could be incredibly talented and smart, but if your lineage wasn't proper, you were going nowhere your entire life. Everything was riding on who your family was. So it follows when your family genealogy was being recorded, the people that did it would highlight your accomplishments, your family's accomplishments, your heroes in your ancestry. And so they would often finesse your heritage, which that's what makes Matthew 1 so interesting. If you're just joining us, we're in this Christmas series we've called Unexpected, and it's about the holy surprises in Jesus' birth. And last week we saw that Jesus' birth overturns our expectations of greatness. And today we're going to see how the unexpected people in Jesus' family tree proves there's room in God's story for every one of us in God's family. So today we're going to spend some time looking at that list of names that we put up there. So just I want you to hang with me through that. And we're going to see some of the unexpected people that were in Jesus' genealogy. And then, of course, we're going to talk about, you know, how that may apply to us and maybe some of the surprises we might learn about how to follow Jesus today. So in our overview, who are the unexpected people in Jesus' family line? It's a line that includes women. And you say, Britt, I don't know if you know about basic reproductive biology, but you might be interested to know there are women in everybody's genealogy. They're necessary. But the fact that Matthew includes women in the genealogy, that was shocking in their culture. Ancient genealogies most always traced their history through the men of the family. So the fact that Matthew includes women at all is already unexpected. And in particular, the women that he includes is even more surprising. And I just condensed some of this, so I'm going to put this up here, and you can see some of the names capitalized. This is the genealogy of the Messiah. There's Tamar. These are all women. Rahab, Ruth, and Uriah's wife. And Matthew complicates. You should probably go to the next slide, I think, on that, if people want to see it. Is that in there? I don't know. Okay, never mind. Matthew highlights these women. That's too fast. We'll be there. I'm with you. Thank you. Matthew highlights women with these complicated and even sometimes scandalous stories. There's Tamar. You can find her story in Genesis 38. Her story is not one you would put in a kid's Bible. She was married to Judah's son, and she became a widow and was left without children, and Judah had failed in his responsibility to provide for her, so Tamar disguised herself as a prostitute and tricked Judah into sleeping with her. That's in your Bible. Then there's Rahab. See her story in Joshua. She lived in Jericho and was known as a prostitute. And when Israel's spies came into the city, she hid them to protect them. Why? Because she had heard of Israel's God, and she believed that he was real, and then she and her household were spared when Jericho fell. And then there was Ruth from the book of Ruth. By birth, Ruth had no claim to God's promises, but she clung to her mother-in-law, Naomi, and to Naomi's God. And when Naomi told her that the best thing for her was to return to her people after her husband had died, Ruth replied thusly in 1:16, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay, and your people will be my people, and your God, my God, my God." And so Ruth became the great-grandmother of King David. And then we're in Matthew 1, he mentions the wife of Uriah. He doesn't even name Bathsheba here. Instead, he calls her the wife of Uriah in a way to cause us to remember the scandal that was involved. Not hers, but by association. Remember, David saw her bathing. He summoned her, committed adultery with her, and then orchestrated her husband's death to cover it all up. And yet from that tragic story came Solomon and eventually Jesus. So why all these women that are so unexpected? For Matthew's audience, this was jaw-dropping. These names are not resume builders. They're names you'd expect to hide. They're outsiders, Gentiles, women, and people tied to scandal. But Matthew brings them to the front of the stage. And it's his way of saying that Jesus didn't come from a perfect family. He came from a real one. And that's good news because it means that he came for messy people. So if you feel like an outsider, if your past haunts you, if your family tree doesn't look perfectly adorned like your Christmas tree, Matthew wants you to know that you're not excluded. You're exactly the kind of person that Jesus came for. Then in verses 7 through 11, there's a line of sinners. Matthew lists some of the great kings in Jesus' lineage, and you kind of expect that, like a highlight reel of greatness. And some of those kings are called good, like Asa and Hezekiah, but other kings in the list are described in the Bible as bad or evil. There's Rehoboam, the father of Abijah, Manasseh, the father of Amnon, and Josiah, the father of Jeconiah. Rehoboam, he was Solomon's son, and he's the one that inherited the throne after all the wisdom and glory and wealth of his father's reign. And he could have carried on Solomon's legacy, but instead, his arrogance split the kingdom in two. The people asked for lighter work and less tax burden, and his advisor told him, like, show compassion to your people at this time. But he listened to the younger men and said this, my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will make it heavier. And his pride and his divisiveness fractured the nation, and from that point on, Israel was divided north and south. Then there was Manasseh. He might be the most shocking name on the list. He reigned for 55 years, and he's remembered as one of the worst kings in Israel's history. He built altars to Baal, a false god. He practiced sorcery. He consulted mediums. He punished and killed innocent people, and even sacrificed his own sons to false gods. So if you were cleaning up the family resume, Manasseh would be the name that you would erase. Then there's Jeconiah. Jeconiah's reign was short, but it marked one of Israel's darkest moments. Under his leadership, Babylon besieged Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, and carried God's people into exile. We looked at that story a number of months ago. And he reigned in this time where it just looked like God had abandoned God's people, that his promises were not true. So there's a pattern here. The kings in Jesus' lineage remind us that even the worst failures, the darkest scandals, and the deepest exiles can't derail God's plan. Then Matthew's genealogy ends with like this account of a line of forgotten people. Shealtiel, Zadok, Elihud, and then Joseph and Mary. We'll talk about them. Imagine most of the people listed here in verses 12 through 17 aren't names that you recognize. And that's because Jesus' lineage includes those who came after Israel's glory days and during their darkest days being exiled to Babylon, the story in Ezra and Nehemiah. And they're just ordinary, obscure, forgotten people until you get to Joseph and Mary. And the only reason we know them is because they're so closely associated with Jesus. You guys know what a musical crescendo is? It's that gradual increase of sound in a song that builds and builds until there's this giant climax or peak. And it's designed to like heighten anticipation and make you feel like something really big is coming. And you would think, like in history, this story of Jesus seems to be building toward this grand dramatic crescendo, but when Jesus came, it wasn't with fanfare or blaring trumpets. Instead, the crescendo just resolved itself quietly and unexpectedly in an ordinary family, ordinary people like Joseph and Mary. At the end of the line that included women and bad and good kings and the forgotten who lived through the dark days of Israel and then simple people like Joseph and Mary comes Jesus. History was waiting for this moment for the Messiah to come. But he didn't come with the great fanfare of a king or a dignitary. He didn't come from this pedigreed heritage of all successful, influential people. His lineage includes the powerless, the broken, and the ordinary. So what can we learn from that? What can we learn from the unexpected family of Jesus? Number one, there's a place in God's family for each of us. There's a place in God's family for each of us. If women like Tamar and Rahab and Ruth and Bathsheba are named in Jesus' family line, then everyone counts in God's family. So if you think that you're among a group of people whose society today tells you that you really don't matter, or your rights have been pushed aside, or you feel invisible in our world today, or maybe you're ostracized from family, then consider this picture in Luke 7. Jesus is invited to the home of a Pharisee named Simon, and the room is filled with these religious leaders, men of reputation and standing, and then she walks in. Luke calls her a woman who had lived a sinful life. Probably everyone in town knew her reputation, and to them, she didn't belong in that room. She didn't count. She didn't belong. And yet she comes anyway, carrying this alabaster jar of perfume, and she kneels at Jesus' feet. She's weeping, and her tears wet his feet, and she wipes them with her hair, kissing them and pouring perfume on him. And Simon, the Pharisee, is horrified. And he says in the room, if Jesus were really a prophet, he'd know what kind of woman this is. It's like he was saying, what is she doing here? And then Jesus flips the script in Luke 7:47. He says, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. But whoever is forgiven little loves little. Do you know who this woman was? This was Mary of Bethany, Martha and Lazarus's sister. Do you know she became like family to Jesus? Jesus stayed in her home, which is the ultimate symbol of acceptance. She sat at Jesus' feet while he taught the disciples with the men as one being discipled by Jesus. And just like Tamar and Rahab, she's the last person you would expect to be accepted into the family. Yet her name is written into God's story because grace had reframed her past. And grace can reframe yours. If you're thinking you're not good enough for God's family, you know what? On your own, you're not. Maybe you don't have a lot of money. Maybe you're not beautiful or handsome. Maybe by today's culture, you're invisible. Maybe you've been mistreated by people, maybe even Christians in the past. Maybe you've had some really big failures in your life. Maybe you've have multiple divorces and multiple broken relationships. You live with regrets. You have crime in your past, addiction maybe. You walked away from God and you feel like you don't belong in this building right now. Jesus' family proves that no matter what your past, no matter how the world sees you or doesn't see you at all, there's a place in God's family for you. And Jesus welcomes you with open arms. Number two, God is bigger than our failures. God is bigger than our failures. Israel's kings were a mixed bag. Some faithful, many failures. Yet God's promise marches on. Because even our worst mistakes can't derail what God is going to do. You know, I love all the, I call them the knucklehead stories in the Bible. People that think they're really dialed in, have it all together, and others don't, but then something happens to make them realize they're really not that cool? Usually through a crash and burn, just the way we learn, right? So think about the author of this book we're reading today, Matthew. Matthew was one of Jesus' 12 disciples. But before following Jesus, he was a tax collector, someone who was seen as a traitor to his people because he collected money for Rome and then he skimmed off the top for himself. So he was a shyster, a grifter. And that background makes it all the more striking that God uses him to write this gospel that emphasizes Jesus as the fulfillment of Old Testament promises to Israel. He wrote especially with a Jewish audience in mind, showing that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah, the true king who comes in an unexpected way. So Matthew, the one who would be despised by his countrymen for his treason, ends up writing the book about Jesus that is the most helpful to Jewish people believing in Jesus. Jesus simply invited Matthew to follow him, and he was patient with him, and he shaped him. And by the end of the story, he writes a gospel. The gospel with the genealogy that includes imperfect people. Do you know that Matthew always refers to himself as Matthew the tax collector? Not just Matthew. I don't think that that's because he could never get over the guilt of his past, but I think he always wanted to highlight that God is always bigger than our failures. Martin Luther wrote, "God can draw a straight line with a crooked stick." And we're all crooked sticks, aren't we? God uses us even though we fail, even though we're far from perfect. And isn't it true that often he uses us through our failures, not in spite of them? You see, just like Judah's kings, their failures didn't stop God's plan. In fact, Jesus used their weaknesses as raw material for transformation. And Jesus' unexpected family lineage demonstrates how God's goodness cannot be thwarted by our mistakes and our shortcomings. If God can rewrite their story, he can rewrite yours, because God is bigger than our failures. Last, number three, God uses ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things. He uses ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things. Most of the names in this last section of Matthew 1 are nobodies. Forgotten people living in hard times, yet God used them to bring his son into the world. And that means that our quiet faithfulness matters. Your prayers, your selfless parenting, your serving, the job that you can't brag about at the neighborhood Christmas party but pays the bills and takes care of your family, none of that is wasted. Because nobody knows about it or you, but God works through ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things. Think about the disciples. Jesus doesn't recruit from the rabbinical schools or the halls of power. He calls fishermen and tax collectors, ordinary men and women to follow him. And one of my favorite stories in the Gospels is the feeding of the 5,000. Not because of the miracle, but because of how it came about. This massive crowd has been following Jesus. Thousands of people. It's getting late. They're getting hungry. The disciples are panicking. How are we supposed to feed all these people? And then Andrew speaks up. John 6:9. He says, "Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" We don't even know the boy's name. He's anonymous. Just a kid who his mom packed a lunch for him. But he hands over what he has, and Jesus does something extraordinary with it. You know, the gospel records very few extraordinary people in Jesus' entourage. And that's the point in Brennan Manning's classic book, The Ragamuffin Gospel. The title says it all, but he writes this: "Our very ordinariness, our very brokenness, is not a hindrance, but our only hope. Grace works most powerfully through those who have nothing left to prove." Just like those forgotten names after the exile, Jesus builds his kingdom through ordinary people, faithful, often unseen, but woven into his extraordinary story. So if you would describe yourself by beginning with just, I'm just a mom, I'm just a dad, I'm just a retiree, I'm just a teacher, just an owner of a small business, just a checker at a grocery store, just a simple person that gets up and goes to work to take care of my family, just a guy who used to be a fireman. Thank you for those of you that are still paying attention. And when you think of any of the gifts that God may have instilled in you, maybe you're like, well, how far will that go among so many? Every time in your head you're thinking, I'm just, I want you to remember this genealogy, to be reminded that faithfulness matters more than we can ever imagine, because God does extraordinary things through ordinary people. I'm going to ask the kids to come up in the choir. So you guys make your way up here. And while they do, I just want to tell you that this year, while you're reading the Christmas story to your family or just pondering it to yourself, take a few moments and read Matthew 1. And then when your eyes start to blur over with this boring list of names that you can't pronounce, be reminded that we are part of an unexpected family that includes people whose society says don't matter, broken people with regrets, and ordinary folks that just show up to do what they can. And that reveals every one of us matter, because we're all part of the unexpected family of God.
Hey everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.